According to reports, new public protector Busisiwe Mkhwebane has laid a criminal charge against her predecessor Thuli Madonsela following a complaint from President Jacob Zuma. According to the reports, Mkhwebane opened the case at the Brooklyn Police Station, Pretoria, 2 weeks ago in connection with the leaking of an audio tape of an interview Madonsela had with Zuma during her state capture investigation. The recording is damaging for Zuma because it disproves his claim that he was never given a chance to put forward his side of the story. This is the latest with regards to Advocate Thuli Madonsela's explosive state of the capture report, but a panel discussion at the Institute for the Advancement of Journalism in Joburg last week heard that the alleged state capture by the Gupta family was just a small part of serious state capture. We are joined by Right to Know founder Dale McKinley. Dale, good morning to you and welcome to the program.
Good morning, thank you.
Thank you for joining us. We also have with us on the program UCD constitutional law expert and political analyst Kathy Powell. Kathy, good morning to you and welcome to the program.
Good morning, thank you very much.
Thank you for joining us. Dr. Dale, we begin with yourself. Now, perhaps at the outset you could outline for listeners what is state capture? How do we define state capture and what does it mean in our present context?
Well, basically, I think if we take a generic description of state capture, it's influencing on the state for political corruptive gains. In other words, where individuals benefit, where groups of individuals within the state would be benefit. It doesn't matter who's doing the capturing. It could be many different parties, but essentially where those relationships are either corrupt or they're self-serving and not in the public interest. If we take that broad definition, my argument was when we had this debate last week that, yes, what we have in the form of the Gupta-Zuma relationship is certainly a form of state capture, influence of a particular family, in the terms of appointments and contracts and tenders, but that this has been going on for quite some time, and that we mustn't see this in isolation. From the beginning of our transition in 1994, and people oftentimes don't want to talk about this, the classic example would be the arms deal, where very powerful interests, in this case in the military-industrial complex and from overseas as well as here, basically were able to capture very specific interests within the state to push through a arms deal that we did not need, which was hugely over-expensive and has caused us a massive amount of problems in which there were many corrupt relationships, including ministers as well as all the way down to local officials. And there are many other examples throughout the last 20 years of this taking place. We can't forget in the mid-2000s where the National Directorate of Public Prosecutions, the intelligence agencies, were being captured for particular political party interests and spying on each other and so forth and so on. This is what led to the rise of President Zuma at Polokwane. So it's in the context of this that if we're going to talk about this state capture issue, that we need to do it in its holistic manner and a historical way as well.
Yes, interesting perspective you give in terms of not isolating this. Now, moving on to you, Kathy, there are so many levels to state capture. What are the most severe implications of state capture for our constitution?
It's for the constitution and for the country. I'd say the most severe implication for the country is when it reaches a point that it threatens the economy, so it threatens a collapse. The most severe implications for the constitution is that the constitution gets ignored, becomes a piece of paper. I would disagree a little bit with that very broad definition of state capture. Obviously, corruption in all its forms is important and must be dealt with. But I think state capture can also be described more narrowly as when the state is not actually being run by the organs ostensibly appointed to run the state. And that's, of course, the threat to the constitution. So the constitution sets up certain governing bodies, it sets up the way in which those governing bodies are put into place, and it sets up what they're meant to be doing for the good of the country as a whole. Now, if there's corruption, then they're not acting for the good of the country as a whole. But if there's state capture, they're not actually being run by the elected representatives. They're being run by somebody else. That's what I would call state capture, and it seems to have reached the stage here based on the latest public protector report, but also on various affidavits that have been provided and on the evidence that we see from the Russian nuclear deal. It seems to have reached the stage where it's not actually the elected government running the country, but a private interest completely. In other words, the elected government are merely puppets for some other power. And that obviously completely destroys the Constitution, but also it could mean, in the case of the nuclear deal, for example, that the country gets bankrupted. And I think that's the point at which state capture becomes vitally important to counteract.
Yes. Dr. Dale, in terms of, you know, comparing various aspects, is there a difference between state capture and white-collar crime? Both seems to be something that South Africans have a high tolerance for.
Well, yes. In fact, we oftentimes forget. We focus a great deal on the state and the public corruption, but there was a report released by PricewaterhouseCoopers just last year that placed South Africa the number one white-collar crime capital of the world. That we have huge amounts of corrupt relationships take two. It's not just one individual. So when we have capturing going on, it's two individuals or entities that are basically making deals behind closed doors or influencing each other for particular decisions that are being taken. And in this case, let me give a classic example. And this is, again, something that many people don't want to talk about, which is during the 1990s, when we had a macroeconomic program which was dedicated to redistribution, to basic meeting basic services and needs, and all of a sudden we were told by the finance ministry in 1996 that was going to be put in the rubbish bin, and what we were going to adopt was a neoliberal strategy which was about essentially benefiting big business and corporations, taking corporate tax rates down, tariffs were going to be taken away, all sorts of other kinds of things. And we had a situation where essentially many would argue that the finance ministry early on was captured by corporate interests that were not serving the people. So what did we have? We had massive privatization of state assets. We had poor individuals being cut off from their water and electricity. This is what led to the protests initially in the late 1990s and early 2000s, in terms of a government that was serving particular interests and not those of its own constituency and those of its majority. So what my argument is that, my understanding of state capture, and I'm going to read you a definition here that I think captures this, from several academics, that said the state capture is systematic political corruption to further private interests, significantly influencing the state's decision-making processes to their own advantage through unobvious channels that may not be illegal. So essentially, also, it's not just what we can see and what gets exposed oftentimes. It's those backroom relationships and all of those things that oftentimes don't come to the surface, but which are serving very particular interests. And I could give you many, many statistics over the last 10 years that would prove and show you that essentially those interests are being served and not those of the majority of South Africans. We could go to the wage share in the economy. We could go to the tax rate and so forth. So this is a debate that needs to go much deeper. It's a good debate and a good conversation that we should have. But my fear is that oftentimes as South Africans, we have a very short-term perspective and we don't look at the entire picture of things, and therefore we don't capture what really is at the heart of the systemic crisis, and we think it's simply about removing a few individuals and that'll take care of the situation.
So, as you outline, you know, important for us to have this debate and explore various aspects. Kathy, in terms of, you know, looking at it from different angles, is state capture not a lame or more palatable term for political corruption?
I would suggest a specific form of political corruption. I don't think it's a lame description. I think it's a terrible accusation. It's a very strong term. I'm thinking of points. I agree with Dr. Dale's the description that he read. But when I think of state capture, and in particular, I'm thinking of the allegations by Ntibisi Yonas and Faki Mentor that they were actually offered jobs by the Guptas. I'm thinking of the point where the actual running of the government is done by somebody else. So members of government are being appointed by somebody who is not constitutionally empowered to appoint them, because the person who is constitutionally empowered is corrupt and has handed over that power to somebody else. So it's a form of corruption. But it's a specific form of corruption where the state itself becomes a resource for the private party. I agree that we need to we need to address the systemic problem. In other words, getting rid of certain people is not going to change the fact that we've got a structure which is rife for corruption and is set up with a whole lot of people who are prepared to serve interests that will serve them rather than serve the country. So that has to be addressed. At the same time, I think I get a little bit nervous when people start talking about context and history and everything so on, because it seems to divert attention away from an extremely pressing problem that we're facing right now. Maybe we need to, while we address the systemic problem, deal with the most pressing emergency as well.
Yes, the context that you highlight, an interesting point with regards to, diverting attention. Coming back to you, Dr. Dale, there are those that believe it is state capture is being used as a tool by the opposition to bring down President Jacob Zuma and the ANC. There are others who trivialize it by saying it is nothing new, as the apartheid regime used the same method to enrich themselves. Are we taking away from the extreme severity of the report by trying to make it a political issue rather than something that impacts on each and every South African?
Listen, it's all politics. It's a false dichotomy between saying that this is a political issue and something else is not political. They're all political issues. They affect us all. It is not about canceling one out to serve another perspective. It's about having a full perspective on this thing. So I'm not suggesting in the least. And those who know me and know that I'm a very active member of civil society, and my organization, The Right to Know, has been very, very active in trying to open up this Zuma administration in particular in its secrecy, its corrupt deals, its legislation that would take us backwards into a very, era of more of kind of a secretive government, and where those corrupt deals are covered up, lack of transparency, lack of access to information. All of these are fundamental struggles. So I'm not suggesting in the least that we need to lessen those struggles, that we don't need to concentrate on what's in front of us, obviously. But in order to address what's in front of us, in order to address this issue, we must do so in a way that understands that there are many aspects of our government and our private sector that are intertwined. We have a corrupt relationship systemically that goes beyond the Guptas. The Guptas are one form of that corruption. And they're one very specific one, and we must deal with it. And I agree, we must make those people who have done these things accountable, including up all the way up to the president. That's not the question. The question is, as we move forward, if Cyril Ramaphosa becomes the next president of the country, as it seems possibly likely that this might be the case, and those that are calling for Zuma's head within the ANC take those ministerships, are things going to fundamentally remain the same, or are they just going to take different forms? And this is the question that, as civil society and citizens, we must find ways that we can reclaim back our democratic power, that we can reclaim back the accountability of our elected representatives, irregardless of what party they belong to, whether it's the ANC, the DA, or otherwise. And I think that struggle is part and parcel of dealing with the present crisis.
Kathy, in my introductory comments, I spoke about the fact that the new public protector, Busisiwe Mkobani, has laid criminal charges against her predecessor, Thuli Madonsela. What does this tell us? Does this tell us that she is perhaps dancing to the tune of Zuma?
It does indeed. It gives off the very strong signals that the public protector's office has been captured. I think we might have to give up on the public protector protecting the public for the next 7 years. The problem with what she's done, there's several problems with laying a charge against her predecessor. The first is that she did it rather than the president. If he thinks a crime has been committed, then he can lay the charge himself. He doesn't need her. The second is that she did it without any internal investigation, which means she more or less acted as though Zuma is her boss, which shows a fundamental misunderstanding of the whole office of the public protector, which is to be an independent body that ensures good governance. Now, if you're ensuring good governance, you've actually got to keep an arm's length from especially the president, so that you can check that the government, like the president, is behaving properly. So we have in that laying of a charge an extremely... It's not just a dangerous sign. I would take it as evidence that we can give up on the public protection, actually protecting the public.
Dr. Dale, in terms of the capture of various organs of government, the SABC, the Hawks, etc., how has this panned out and what have we seen in this regard?
Well, what we're seeing clearly is it's not obviously just the Public Protector's Office. As you mentioned, the SABC, what has been going on there is just incredibly outrageous. Claudio Motsuneng and his crew there have basically just rode roughshod over all of the laws that govern the SABC, over the accountability mechanisms. We have a one-person board running the SABC. I mean, it's almost surreal. And, you know, the crisis there, the crisis at the Hawks, the crisis at SAA, for example, at the South African Airways, and other state-owned enterprises, and we could probably mention several other examples, are fundamentally about groups of individuals, both within the state as well as within the private sector, colluding to serve their own interests, to basically use state resources for private gain. And that creates a fundamental governance problem. It's a democratic crisis. In other words, if we don't have a situation, we can vote people into power, we can have elections, but if we don't have our mechanisms of democracy are not working in between those elections, where we can hold people accountable and people can be, you know, put in jail if they break the law, if they steal public monies, and so forth, then we've got a political crisis on our hands, which I think many people are beginning to realize. So it's a question of reclaiming that space, which I think once we begin to do that and begin to put people in positions of power who are competent individuals, who can do the job, who are accountable not only to their political masters and their party, but to the public as a whole, then we'll begin to reclaim that terrain. And I have no doubt that we're capable of doing that. It's going to be a long, hard struggle. We can use the law to do that. We can use some of the courts. We can use mass mobilization, public pressure, all of the tools in our toolbox. As civil society and as a democratic public, we must begin to use. But most importantly, it's requiring that the majority of the people in this country and citizens wake up to these realities and realize that if we don't act and if we don't speak out, that essentially this is going to continue in different forms as we move forward.
Speaking about the different forms, Cathy, ANC Deputy Secretary General Jesse Duarte has questioned the independence of the Reserve Bank, saying that it's a private ownership posed a difficulty. Is that the ANC targeting now other aspects of government that are supposed to be independent?
Yes. As we know, there are various power struggles going on within the ANC at the moment. And the president himself appears to be using as many organs of state as possible to advance his struggle, including the NPA and the Hawks. Now, as we know, Treasury has been resisting this. It's been independent. One of the ways in which that effect can be neutralized is if the government gets more direct control over the Reserve Bank. So yes, it's a sinister move, and it's a move, yes, that puts more and more institutions of state and of government and of civil society that are meant to be running this country together under the control of one person who appears to be under the control of somebody else.
So, Dr. Dale, in terms of the economy, what implications does state capture have on our economy?
Well, it has many different implications. Obviously, the first and most obvious one is that it's taking public resources that should be used for things like delivering services to the people and socioeconomic development, skills training, education, health, you name it, across the board, and it's diverting those resources to wasteful expenditure and oftentimes illegal expenditure to benefit individuals, groups of individuals, and that's certainly, it bleeds our economy. That's the first thing. Secondly, it corrupts the economic, I think, life of our country, because we must remember that this is not simply about the big ticket issues. We oftentimes are rightfully concentrating on some of those things, but this goes all the way down to local level. So what you can have is you can have, you know, many versions of the same thing at the district and municipal level. We can see in the city of Joburg, the city of Tshwane, with some of the revelations of the, you know, it's whether it's 100 million rand or 1 billion rand, it has fundamental impacts on not only the public fiscus, but on the legitimacy, on the trust relationship that develops between people and their government. If people don't think that their taxes and what they're contributing to the state are being used for what they should be used for, then you've got a breakdown in trust, and the legitimacy of the government suffers. So it becomes not only an economic crisis, it becomes a political crisis. And we are, yes, we're a wealthy country to a certain extent, but we also have huge economic challenges. And if we don't spend the money properly, and we don't spend it within the budgets and everything else, we are seeing ourselves what happens. Our debt rises. We have a situation, it's simply the same as on a personal level. If you begin to spend your money at the casino most of the time and go off and buy all sorts of things that you don't need and that your family is not going to benefit from, eventually you're going to be bankrupt. And I think that is now becoming a reality to a lot of people, that we're heading in a direction that if this continues, we're going to have a fiscus that is basically bankrupt, the nuclear deal being obviously at the forefront of that. But in this case, what we need to do is we need to follow our laws. We have very good laws and very good regulations. Sometimes the big problem is the lack of implementation, the lack of political will to do those things. And it's up to us as the citizenry, as the public, to force that. Democracy is about contestation. We can't just sit back every 5 years and hope that things are going to turn out the way that we like. We're going to have to fight for these things and struggle for them, and that's good, because then it engages debate, it engages a necessary tension within our democracy that tells our representatives that they are going to have to come back to the people constantly, and they're going to have to be held accountable for what they do.
Cathy, what about the legal and the moral implications of state capture?